Hey everybody, welcome to My Up Your Movies. We are screaming towards the end of this season and into season 10, but I wanted to thank you for continuing to listen and review and everything. You guys are the reason we keep doing this. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to present to you Popeye. Now, this is a lost episode that we re-recorded because, I guess, Google / iCloud screwed us, and so I'm fixing that mistake. But enjoy the musical cover of the Robert Altman Popeye that, frankly, I like more each time I hear. Thanks, everyone. Welcome to My AP Movies. This week we're talking about, how do I put this? The musical where the theme song is the worst song. I'm your host, Nick Hoffman, and on panel we've got
Atlanta author Matthew W. Quinn.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I am what I am because that's all that I am.
Yeah, and I guess I didn't mention the title. We watched Robert Altman's Popeye.
That still just feels like such a weird thing to set together. Robert Altman's Popeye.
I don't know what drug made him have to do this, but it just seems like, you know, guys, I've always wanted to do a musical.
I think this is some random idea that came up at a meeting at some point, at least according to the Wikipedia.
What happened was Robert Evans of the Godfather fame and cocaine fame.
And the Kid Notorious TV show.
Which I remember watching. That was hilarious.
I found it. After Internet Indiana Joning, I found it. It's something. It's a very strange show.
He died a couple years ago, didn't he, Robert Evans?
Yeah.
Speaking of, if you don't have, I believe it's on Netflix this season, but there's a show called Documentary Now, and there's a documentary called The Kid Stays in the Picture, which they did a parody of on Documentary Now.
Mr. Runner-Up,
which he goes, and I'm done. It's all, I'm done. I've done it all. And I'm going to retire from filmmaking. Wait a minute. Is racism a thing? Crash wins Best Picture. And, oh, God, I love it. Anyway, so Robert Evans. Sorry.
Well, he originally bid for the rights to Annie, and he lost. Mm. And so in a board meeting, he's like, okay, what do we have the rights to that we can turn into a musical? Somebody said Popeye, and then he was like, well, fuck it. We're doing a Popeye movie.
God help me. So I was talking. So if let's go behind the curtain. We recorded this once and then the internet swallowed it up. We've lost exactly three episodes. Two will be re-recorded. This is one. The other one is Mr. Magoo, which none of us can bring us ourselves to re-record.
It might still be on Disney Plus. It might not be. What's the name? Miguel Ferrer is in that movie, isn't
Miguel
he?
Miguel Ferrer is in it.
Ferrer, that's...
And the star is Leslie Nielsen, and it is a crime against humanity.
Yeah.
I will also say we have an episode that should have been lost, which is George of the Jungle, which, God help me, the audio is almost unlistenable. But we had such a fun time recording it. We didn't want to lose it, and we had most of it. So there you go. This is one we lost, and we decided to redo because A, it's in the same season, B, we've just had hot wings and I needed something, and C, we thought this would be a good way to round it out. We haven't done a lot of Robin Williams since he passed, and I will say, in this movie, he's the best part.
He's Charlize Theron in Monster. He's unrecognizable.
And you know what? It's a hard part. He commits to it. He sings, which he doesn't sing a lot. At least not until Aladdin, which is years later. God help
me. This was his first movie.
He's incredible. I mean, and the rest, I mean, the movie is, I will give, the only thing I will mention about the previous recording is the other one had Charlie Rose in it. He couldn't make it this time. But Charlie swayed me on this movie. I wanted to hate it. Mm-hmm. And rewatching it, I was like, it's a mess. It's sloppy. It's well produced. It's if you watch it, it's on the set of what looks like a stunt spectacular at Universal Studios. But Charlie loved it, and his love kind of leaked off on me, which sounds very...
It's incredible. Oh, boy. I'll go ahead and overlook that love leak comment there. It's incredibly unique. I mean, Robert Altman was a really talented filmmaker, and this was the only time he got to do a blockbuster. And by God, you've never seen anything like
that. That village is still there on that island near Malta. They have people get go on tours.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like the Hobbit village in New Zealand. And it's always so funny. When I taught the class on the 90s that I did, which, you know, stay tuned, check out American Experiment, amex.substack.com. I'm working on something new with that. In the 90s and late 80s, we have this auteur theory nonsense, which is that there are these artists that are directors that do things that are the authors of their own film, crashing up against the indie movement, crashing up against the blockbuster movement. So a lot of people like David Fincher, like Cronenberg, people who should never make big budget movies are being approached with big budget like films, and they're like, we'll give it a shot. Even you know, Kevin Smith, who I think is made three excellent films and a bunch of nonsense after Clerks and then Dogma, they're like, hey, you want to make a movie with Warner Brothers? And he was like, sure, why not? And he's just a fat dude in a hockey jersey at that point.
Yep.
And so it's so interesting to say, like, what if we take these people out of their element and let them try something crazy? The difference is now Disney royally fucks it up. What's the woman who made Eternals? The woman who got the Academy Award nod?
Oh, I can't remember her name. Why am I blanking on her name? I'm going to have to wiki this real quick.
So while you're looking it up, it's like Adam Wright with Ant-Man. Like, you get someone who has like a pulse and a character, and you're just like, yeah, but what if we made it Disney and we just made it paint by numbers? And so this woman who did the Eternals is the same way. She won the Academy Award for Nomadland, I believe.
Yes, she did. That's exactly what's going on.
And then they like took Eternals and then they Disneyified it by 37%. And so it's utter nonsense. It didn't get any Academy Award nods. And you hire a director for no reason. At least here, they're throwing a whole bunch of budget behind Robert Altman. And he's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make a musical against a cartoon. And it turns out, it's something. It's not a masterpiece, but you're like, holy shit, this is a something. A musical
with a songwriter at that point nobody wanted to work with, which is Harry Nilsson of...
Everybody's talking
about how you put the lime in the Coke and then you drink it all up.
I am what I am. By the way, I'm sure you saw it before we did this episode. I'm sure you saw this before we did the episode. What was the song you remembered?
The Bluto song. I'm mean.
Oh, really?
If you know okay, what I mean. Because
he needs me, he needs me, he needs me, he needs me. The olive oil love song, which... actually, I was just randomly doing a YouTube surf of old movie trailers.
Yeah, yeah.
I ended up on the trailer for Punch Drunk Love.
Oh, yeah.
And it was that song is like what ended the trailer.
Mine was, I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger. Guess which one is the fat guy? I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. He will gladly pay on Tuesday for a hamburger today. God help me. I just broke all my rules about Mike. About microphone like respect, but God help me, that song is so catchy. Everything is food. Meanwhile, none of us said the theme song, which they sing at the end, because the line I'm strong to the finish because I eat me spinach is a stupid fucking line. I'm sorry.
How much spinach do you think it sold
back in the day when it came out? A million billion gallons of spinach.
Well, what's now, funny is none. What's funny is in the movie, Popeye will not eat spinach.
It's his pappy who, and in the parenting book that they read later, it literally says, rule lesson one, eat your spinach, which is just, this movie, God, you know what? And this is nothing against the late great. Is he still alive? Robert Altman?
No, he died. Okay,
the late great Robert Altman. This script and the way it looks is a Zucker Abrams Zucker production, mm-hmm. right? Like that when he opens the parenting book with Sweet Pea on his knee, Pappy, and it says, lesson one, eat your spinach. I'm just like, that's a Zucker Abrams Zucker joke. Like that, it is such a cartoon of a movie. I know it's based on a cartoon, fuck you. But like,
no, thank you, Nick.
It embraces that cartoon spirit though. Like we've done the Flintstones before, which in retrospect is it's weird in its own different ways from this movie, because this movie in terms of mainstream is very weird, but they at least try to make it look like an actual cartoon. Like the Flintstones, it was all about how we took a cartoon and made it real, which doesn't work because they're still defying the laws of physics, which you can't do in real life. Here, it's live action, but at no point did I ever think, oh, Sweet Haven is a place that could exist and Popeye is a real human being. He's still a cartoon.
Yeah, it's so many backflips and steam coming out of people's ears and stuff.
Oh, yeah, and then Bluto literally turning yellow when he's scared and seeing red when he's mad.
Yeah. And again, it's just, it's funny because it's not filters. Everything is just suddenly painted red. It's it's well done. It's practical. There's no CGI. I like that. But it's just, it's absurdist in a way. Like,
well, like there's that whole scene where they're crashing on what's supposed to be a horse race, but it looks like a carnival game.
It does. It looks like electric football or something, right? Like,
right. And that's what I mean by just how unusual of a tone this movie is. Because they treat it like it's a real horse race, and it's absurd.
Well, and we should do the plot at this point because we've been talking for 75 minutes already.
But, oh, boy.
I do appreciate the Popeye squint you gave me.
I'll be summarizing the plot of my movie.
Not bad.
Yeah, that's, well, that sounds more like Popeye if he was a character in the Banshees of Inisherin right there.
Actually, you know who it sounds like? It sounds more like Pappy.
Oh, there you go.
Who wants to give it? I'll do it. I haven't done this in a while.
Yeah, go for it.
So a transient sailor washes up on shore. And because he's a stranger in this town, everyone shuns him. But it turns out it's the titular Popeye. After we start with one of the old Fleischman cartoons for half a second, he goes, wait a minute, this ain't my movie. Popeye is literally shunned by everyone. People run away screaming. But he needs a place to crash. And the one place he finds is the oils place. And the oils, of course, include olive, castor, I don't know, baby and vegetable. And while staying there, of course, he is vaguely enamored by Olive, though the fact of the matter is everyone in town hates him. The first person we actually introduce to is the tax collector who is trying to nickel and dime the hell out of people.
Oh, yeah, on the bicycle the entire time.
Exactly right. Olive is engaged to Bluto. But she doesn't want to marry him.
Because he's large.
He's large.
And in running away, I mean, the problem is this is not unlike, say, Charlie Brown's Christmas, where it's actually a bunch of different cartoons strung together to make a plot.
Yeah, this movie could be best be two movies, with Popeye versus Bluto as the first movie and then Poop Deck Pappy in the second.
I will say, because
there's
actually
two big plots.
To your point, I would do it one other, which is that it would be a better 8-episode Netflix series where you introduce why he's coming to town and then all these little stories. Because when Olive Oil runs away, she runs into Popeye. They find Sweet Pea. Then it turns out that Sweet Pea is really good at gambling. And then Bluto tries to take Sweet Pea because they want to make money. And then it turns out that the person in running the town called the Commodore is Pappy. And then Pluto is pissed off that the Commodore is taking their money, so they kidnap Popeye, then they escape. And then it's a race to actually get Pappy's treasure, which doesn't exist. And there's a tentacle porn section, and then that's the end. And like,
oh, that octopus.
And like the thing
about
the
erotic awakening of O.
The erotic awakening of Bluto. but
so that must be the gay version.
But, like, in the end, the whole thing is just, once we establish what I established in the first 5 minutes, it's just like, again, someone read let's be honest, 40 years of Popeye comics, and they just said, well, these things could make a story, and that's the story. And that's kind of it. So, first, let's acknowledge the fact that Pirates of the Caribbean ripped off the introduction of Jack Sparrow
from
Popeye showing up in this town.
Oh, yeah.
The only difference is Johnny Depp has 26% more like cachet at that point than Robin Williams did in his first picture, which, by the way, good on him. His first role as an actor is a Robert Altman role where he's the fucking star. God bless it. I love him. R.I.P. to Robin Williams, one of the hardest deaths we had to talk about. But here is so good.
Plus, it was, again, his first movie.
And it's all like, so like, they give him the worst bleach buzz cut I've seen since the Backstreet Boys were
there. And the fact in the first 30 minutes, he's wearing that raincoat so you can't see his forearms.
But like,
massive underbite.
But that's all him. The underbite, the corncob pipe, like he's fucking Douglas MacArthur. Like, that's all him. Like, also, I just, God help me, I want Robert Altman's Cues documentary, because like the little pipe that like that spins, the boxing gloves that are loose so he can wind up his fucking fist when he tries to make money off the boxing match.
God, that stupid octopus.
It's just, God help me, there's so many gadgets and little special effects. Like Jim, it's a Jim Henson production.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so
Jim Henson's non-union Mexican equivalent,
Jose Nemson.
Yeah.
Like, it's just an utter stone cold delight. I love it to death.
And the thing is, it really shouldn't work. None of this. It's like just such a silly, stupid idea, honestly.
No, and that's why I think this movie is, mostly forgotten. I just would love this to have something. I mean, it's not going to be Criterion, but like an Arrow release, just I can get a good clean copy of that soundtrack. Because some of the songs,
Think there is like a new version of the soundtrack, like on vinyl or something.
I'd buy it, because again, they do a good job. Like, not all the songs are great, but in no musical is every song perfect. But there's just something catchy about like. We each picked our favorite song and they were all different, which credit where credit's due. Like when we did Christmas Carol a million years ago, Muppet Christmas Carol with Tom Herman, like we sang a bunch of the songs together. We did the Muppet movie in the first 100 episodes. We don't do musicals very often here for a lot of reasons. We're doing one now. This one has a lot of catchy songs, man. Now the question we can get to later is, who is this for? I don't know. Because I don't know a lot of kids who would sit through this. My kids definitely do.
Yeah, this movie was too long.
Yeah, it's a shade over 2 hours, like 210.
Yeah, it's...
No, or maybe just a shade under, like 118 minutes. Which is a lot for a musical for kids. This is a kids' movie. It has to be. Right? Like, and I will say, if it was any other cast, it would be better as an animated movie, but the cast is incredible.
Yeah. Shelley Duvall's Olive Oil may be the smartest casting decision ever.
Yes. And what I will say is, I don't know how they recorded the audio. Maybe they undersped it so that it's fast, but like, she and Robin Williams are talking like the characters. The guy who plays Bluto, whose name I couldn't be bothered to know. I don't know who that guy is. But he's out here saying about olive oil. At one point, when they're having the engagement dinner.
Right.
He's playing He Loves Me, He Loves It Not. She Loves Me. And was like, yay! He Loves Not. Boo!
Oh, and he gets progressive. He's getting progressively angrier as he's playing.
At some point, he starts eating the oil's glasses.
He does. And he is fully erect the whole time. But there's just something about his portrayal, which is just, he's committing. Like, there's no one here that I will say is weak sauce, including the fact that the tax collector guy, and I don't know, Sudsy can you know, fact check me on this. He seems to be the dude playing the rival candy maker in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, Slugworth?
He looks like Slugworth, right? He's wearing the bowler cap. He has the big eyebrows. He's like, you know, if you give me every one of those ever-loving gods, if you get me some of his creamed spinach. like, and he's, and it's funny because it's the 1940s, I guess Popeye is like a World War II guy. So he's charging them dimes and quarters, and he's like, a quarter. Go ahead.
That does lead to one of the best lines with that whole thing where they keep raising the price on Popeye to dock in Sweet Haven. Like, he has to pay a dock tax, and it's like, well, it's whatever I feel like the price is. And Popeye's like, I'll pay what I feel like paying.
Right.
That's more bad John Travolta than Popeye. I apologize. No, it's like,
oh, good, jeez. Oh, gosh. I will,
You went Snagglepuss there.
I did.
Exit Sweet Haven, stage left.
That's much better than I was doing, I'll be honest. Also, for lack of a better way to put it, the guy who looks like a rabbi, the Jew, you know what I'm talking about? The guy with the
one of the oil's house guests?
Yeah. He's also, Popeye goes, I'll have these carrots. And he goes, they're 50 cents. He goes, I'll give you a nickels because that's what they was worth. And you're just like,
oh. He's not a physicist, but he knows what matters. Popeye does.
And again, God bless him. A movie we could never do on this is, what's the Matt Damon, Ben Affleck? He's a
Team
guy.
America.
No. He's a dumb guy from Boston, but he's good at math.
Goodwill Hunting.
Goodwill Hunting.
We can never do that.
No.
But it's a Robin Williams movie where every time he gives that monologue on the park bench to Matt Damon, I cry like a child.
And he won an Oscar for that, so.
He deserves it. Fucking, And that's why I will say, we need a voice acting Oscar. And, I mean, because look at it. Robin should have won it for the Genie from Aladdin. There will and never be someone as good, right? Brad Dourif for Chucky. The list goes on.
Well, I mean, especially compared to that remake of Aladdin, I'd love to say Will Smith slaps in that movie as the genie, but he doesn't.
He sucks.
Surprisingly.
And it's a sequel, and it's not going to star Brad Castellaneta. Dan Castellaneta.
Oh.
They announced it. It's going to be terrible. And here's the thing. I don't hate Will Smith. I don't. But what I want him to be is charming, charismatic, and at the wrong end of a gun, he has to talk himself out of it.
He's a completely different presence than Robin Williams.
You know what? Wild Wild West is still better than the live-action Aladdin.
Ooh, there you go.
Because if we're talking from a Will Smith scenario, it's a Will Smith show, baby. And you know what? He's charming. He raps. He's fucking filled with cum and charisma, and he's having sex in the town's water supply when we first meet him. And
that movie was hilarious. Oh boy!
But you know what? That's what you do when there's a bunch of us over. We're hanging out. We're drinking. You watch something like Wild Wild West. You're not gonna ever watch the live action Aladdin. I'm sorry. The best thing that the live action movies ever did was make sure Jon Favreau got another paycheck for that live action Lion King.
And got John Oliver got a paycheck for that movie. But
yeah, but like I don't want Disney to remake their own properties. Well, the whole thing was the Disney vault. Just re-release the shit.
How does
the Jungle Book, you have what actually look like if a Bengal tiger throws down with a bear.
How does Popeye compare to like live action Disney? Because it's the same basic idea.
Yeah, but these are all people doing something with an original script.
All right.
Here's the thing. Like, when you take this animated stuff, let me reverse. There was never an animated Popeye movie. And even if there was, which there may have been some Fleischer nonsense 1,000 years ago, there's so much stuff in that repertoire. You could do it. Like, we've talked about Disney movies a lot in this show because, God help us, we used to be based in childhood properties. But a good childhood property is all about the emotional connection. I don't know who the live-action Disney movies are for. To me, in my mind, they're like for us millennials taking their kids to something because they're like, oh, I liked this property when I was a child. Let's go past that and see how a new generation will like it. There are problems with Little Mermaid. None of those problems are solved by making a live action version, especially a live action version that's 30% longer than its original property. For Popeye, I would say we grew up, if we ever saw Popeye before this this live action movie, in the animated shorts that were done by the Fleischman Studios, mm-hmm. alongside things like, I mean, I think they did Betty Boop. I think they did
the original Superman cartoons from back in the day.
And like, so I saw them now and again. Like, the difference there is those are short segments. And so I think the best comparison is Charlie Brown, where they would occasionally make a 30-minute Christmas special or something, or teach us about the Mayflower, or more recently, if you haven't seen it, the 2012, I think, Peanuts movie, which is done with people like Steven Pestis of Pearls Before Swine, which I think is excellent, but it's still CGI animated. I think this is trying to get there. And I guess stay tuned, or other way around. Either last week or next week, we'll be talking about Garfield, which is similar. Garfield, although I guess we'll talk about Garfield in a whole different way, because children of the 80s, and there's a bunker somewhere out in Idaho or whatever, where James, what's his name? Jim Davis, owns half the fucking state because of Garfield.
Well, I mean, that's a big difference, though, because nobody actually cared about the Garfield movie, which is going to be either before this or after this, but no one cared whether or not that was any good. Robert Altman actually tried to care about Popeye, which that's the thing. He tried. Whether or not he succeeded is up for debate.
I would say whether or not this is art is more in debate than whether or not the Garfield movie is art. Yeah.
All right, well, what makes this more art than Garfield?
The songs.
Okay.
No product placements I'm aware of.
No. There's no product placement unless you believe in catsup, which they spell like catsup. And
you mean Big Spinach didn't finance this movie?
Well, they financed all the cartoons, so it wouldn't surprise me.
I don't think they did. I think the cartoons were sponsored by like the Farm Bill. The Truman Administration sponsors spinach, which comes out of the can looking like cream spinach from Boston Market, which is really something. I would gladly pay you
Tuesday
for a hamburger today.
Even though nobody in that town's giving good old Wimpy credit.
That's what it says. No credit. Especially you, Wimpy. They've caught on to him.
God help me. Okay, so Matt, your favorite song is about the size of his penis. He's large!
He's large!
And if we learn anything from
you sound like Rocky from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
He's large.
Just how large is he?
Wait, why did Rocky go down? Rocky's up here.
No, I was doing Bullwinkle. Rocky over here.
Rocky! Why are they obsessed with Bluto's genital size?
I didn't know you went to Canada, Bullwinkle.
Up there, they measure it in centimeters.
Well, crap.
Save me from Nicholas's drunken antics. That's either Bob Dylan or Bullwinkle J. Moose.
I don't think so. I think I'll leave you here for him to glass.
How many drinks must a Nick go to?
The answer is indeed Blowing in the Wind, by which I mean that's what it's called when Nick takes a breathalyzer.
As a result, is there blood on the tracks?
Because
that's what happens when you drive.
You had it. You nailed the landing, and then you decided to take it up again there, Matt.
Yeah, you nailed the landing and then stumbled off the rhythm.
Well, I'm drunk after all, Rock Bullwinkle.
Rock Bullwinkle.
You were the designated driver.
But it wasn't a rock. It was a Rock Bullwinkle.
Oh, boy.
His evil twin who wants to kidnap me.
Actually, that's a good question, though, despite yourself. This is better than the Rocky and Bullwinkle movie, right?
Oh, big time. But again, it's like because Robert Altman actually cared about the Popeye character, at least pretended he did.
I mean, we've done a lot of these movies, though. I will say this is not as good as George of the Jungle. I like George of the Jungle more than this.
Yeah.
This is better than Lost episode Mr. Magoo. Right?
Well, I don't even remember at this point.
The reason live action cartoons don't work as live action is because cartoons are a different medium, where the laws of physics are different. Even though I ain't no physicist. But anyway, cartoons can't translate into live action. And here it's like Robert Altman really wasn't trying. Like Popeye's makeup isn't all that convincing. And Bluto, I know that actor Paul Davis, who I think was in Midnight Run.
I believe he's right.
One of the prison guards. He's a big guy, but the way he's presented this film, he looks like this. He looks like he would dwarf Andre the Giant.
Well, but
which doesn't make a lot of sense, but it works tonally here.
I will say, the what you said, the caveat at the end, is important here. It works. The proportions work. The costuming, I would say, is pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now, if you don't know the Fleischman...
Fleischer.
I believe you're right. It's Fleischer. If you don't know the Fleischer cartoons well, you might not recognize it. But, like, they do things with facial hair and hats that are very Fleischer Studios.
Yeah, Olive Oil is very down with the cartoon, like the dress and the boots.
Yeah.
And the like, the weird, like, low ponytail she has and the bows and the color scheme she wears.
Even the baby has, like, these inhuman rosy cheeks.
Sweet pea. Mm-hmm.
Says you're a baby. That's you.
Oh, right.
By the way, Robert Altman's actual grandson
was that
baby.
And again, the way that Popeye, maybe it's just Robin Williams improvising, relates to the baby, especially when it's first found with the note pinned to it. He's like, he goes, baby. And the baby goes, baby. He goes, yeah, that's you. Like, that's, I felt like it was improvised. It's a Robin Williams, baby. It's filled with charm. I love that shit. And he's just such a... He's a presence which hurts that's missing. Mm-hmm. God help me. And whenever... If you follow his daughter, Zelda. Zelda named for the video game character. She always posts for her father. Which, again, depression's a hell of a thing. Watch yourself. Anyway... So what do we want to even talk about with the rest of this? Cause God help me. It's just a sloppy mess in a good way.
Yeah, well, the plot just jumps all over the place. Let's talk about the third act where, we meet the giant octopus.
I will introduce one more thing before then. So after Popeye has been shunned, right, we already talked about how, there's a wedding or an engagement party, I guess, where Bluto's going to engage, ask Olive Oil for her hand. She escapes and ends up running into Popeye, and they find the baby, Sweet Pea, fine. But in his rage, Bluto destroys the entire fucking house. He tears down the walls, he punches them out, and so they're living in, like, a hollowed out A-frame, and all the hangers-on, the people who live there, are eating, including Popeye. And there's one scene that is fairly charming where Popeye is an early kind of renter.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever Mama Oil, I don't know what Mama Oil, KY Oil, shows up, whenever she stands, like a good gentleman, he stands as well. And sits down, even though she refuses to sit until everyone's out of the scene. But they redo that same scene where they're all sitting around the table. They all refuse to sit, or he refuses to sit until she sits. But they're essentially sitting outside because the house has been destroyed. And so in an effort to rebuild the home, there's a boxing match on a derelict, like, raft.
Yes.
Which we need to talk about for half a second. Because Popeye is the consummate charmer. He's a gentleman. He's like a real...
He's already beaten up a lot of louts at the bar already.
Yeah, in the scene that ends with the food song. I will gladly pay you to use it. Really like.
Everything is food.
They were mocking him. And so there's fisticuffs, as you were. And at the end of those fisticuffs, he beats the shit out of everyone because he's Popeye.
And he's got forearms as big as my head.
And I will say, this is the fighting parts of this, except for the boxing ring stuff, is the weakest part of the movie to me. Because it's a lot of him slowly stepping out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Which also, Robin Williams was a tiny guy. He was like 5'7", real skinny.
And unfortunately, with those prosthesis on his arms, you don't see the arm hair, which is something I think you need.
Yeah. He's hairier than Zeus, which if you know Zeus, is quite a feat.
Well, I mean, what they were doing is shaving tribbles. Uh-huh. And that's the trouble with tribbles. There's only so much. Would you like a triple merkin?
I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a triple cut today.
He would gladly pay you Tuesday for a merkin or a two. in order to do this, we have this weird scene with this boxer dude. And I should mention, there's this...
He's like the freaking kingpin.
He is.
Do you think this is the movie that invented that 80s trope of fat equals strong? Because the whole thing is Popeye is beating up like 350-pound men throughout the thing. And that's supposed to be how we know he's tough.
Well, Daniel, I love you to death, buddy. But you realize, you and I, if this was the 1950s, we would be, quote, toughs.
Yes.
Because I'm 6'5", you're 6'1".
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and we're big barrel-chested dudes, so that means we're strong if this was a movie starring Marlon Brando in 1952.
When did they start characterizing the Kingpin as being really strong as opposed to being a fat guy?
Always.
You mean like the Daredevil?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's who he was. He was built like...
A sumo wrestler. That was his whole thing.
No. Imagine if the Muppet version of the letter O came to life. That was him in 1965.
Yeah, because the boxer, he doesn't really have any definition, but he is a giant of a man who is everyone is terrified of.
He's like the guy from the Goonies.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's just what he was. He was just a dude that was barrel-chested. Now he plays dirty, which is the name of the game in this universe, right? Because how do I put it? Popeye is a Catholic. It's just everything is guilt and he's morally upright. Like, he's a Boy Scout.
Everything is guilt. The song doesn't work very well.
No, you're right though. Like,
everything is guilt.
The Jewish version. Oi, everything is guilt. Have you called your mother on your hands? Everything is guilt. I would gladly call on Tuesday if I could get through today. Huh. He would gladly call on Tuesday if he could get through today.
You never write. You never call.
Jeez Louise.
Are you wearing a sweater?
Everything is guilt. See, that's funny. Oh, God help me. All right. So the boxing match is funny for a lot of reasons, because Popeye is clearly stronger and the guy keeps doing cheap shots. He punches Popeye in the back of the head when they do the fist bump. He punches Popeye, gives him a good undercut like he's Scorpion or something.
Come here.
And then he goes, you wouldn't knock me out in front of my mother, would you? And he goes, is that your mother over there? And he goes, pleased to meet you, ma'am. And then he tries to punch him in the back of the head. Popeye takes the tumble, which again, it's Robin Williams, the good physical comedy. And then Popeye fucking... We should mention also that what's the fat guy who lives in the oil house?
There's Castor Oil, I think, is her brother. He's kind of thick.
Because he's the one who boxes first, and he gets the ever-loving piss knocked out of him, and then he's literally kicked out of Movie Town.
Mm. I think we see him at the gambling scene. Because
well, right.
Because I'm pretty sure they're in a brothel.
They are. But we'll get back to Popeye and pornography later. I will say, when he's kicked out of scene, and like, it literally just, like, I don't even know how to put it. It is Zucker Abram Zucker. It's yeah. Homestar Runner. It's like, he gets kicked and then gets burned up in the sun, which is funny. Like, he just, pew! It's a
good game. Surprised that didn't happen in this movie. Popeye punching someone into the sun.
They play the sailor's hornpipe.
Do we ever see the octopus again?
It does get punched into the sky. Mm-hmm. Then it has to fight something at Mordor. Like, is this
that is the stupidest, rubberiest thing that's ever been filmed.
Yeah, he punched it so hard it ended up in New Zealand and had to fight hobbits.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, a sailor's life is a life for me. My daughter's obsessed with sea shanties right now. So
roll your boat.
Oh, well, the weatherman gold, the thing of sugar and tea. That's where I am in my life. Thanks, TikTok.
You're using the tickety talk now?
No, but it ends up on the used tubes.
Ah.
On the other side of the TikTok video is Xi Jinping. He's TikTok watching video. You.
Oh, there you go. Wouldn't that be something?
He's singing those sea shanties.
There's a guy on YouTube, or I guess he's on everything now, but that Tom Herman, friend of the show, sent me, where he just turns songs into other songs and he's like, just makes sea shanties out of shit. And I'm just like, oh, God, help me. Oh, my poker face, his poker face, my poker face. It's just, he's very clever. God help me. Okay, so after someone would gladly, like, and again, this movie is kind of just a goings on because things keep happening. Eventually Sweepy starts like picking the horses,
and that's when we see Bluto again after wrecking the oil's house. He just disappears for in universe a week or two.
Yeah,
and then he starts getting the idea they can use Sweepy to gamble and find treasure.
Yeah, pretty much, because the Commodore, who turns out to be Popeye's dad, has been promising treasure for nigh on decades. None has come up. So Sweet Pea actually making mint turns out to be a way to make money. Like, and, you know, Bluto is kind of the muscle here. At one point, Popeye is going to get a ticket. And the fact that he's helping Olive Oil gets him out of the ticket, because apparently Bluto is the guy who's the muscle.
Here. Yep. Yeah, he's Luca Brasi, and the Commodore is Don Vito.
Oh, there you go.
Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes.
Yeah, which is the best people line. People don't seem to realize the Commodore is actually the ultimate villain.
I don't think they don't realize it. Everyone realizes,
because at the end, no one's. It's not like he's gets him to go a long way, promising to get the treasure to pay them all back all the money he stole.
Well, I mean. So you're right in that aspect.
Instead, like, oh, okay, let's all get on the Commodore's ship and chase down Bluto, who's kidnapped Olive Oil.
Not Olive Oil, Sweet Pea.
He got both of them, because Olive is in the funnel.
Yeah, but I thought she was in the funnel. You're right. It's just that Bluto gets away earlier. It's a strange end of the movie. Again, it's the stunt show spectacular end, which is strange. So I don't even know where we are technically in the movie, but
they're trying to use Sweet Pea to make money gambling, and Popeye will not have it.
Oh, right,
because he am what he am.
Yeah, this is
because
where we get
Sweet Pea can pick winning horses.
This is where we get the Robin Williams song, "I am what I am," and that's all that I am.
I'm Popeye the Sailor Man, which honestly is one of, I think, the best songs in the movie.
I mean, that was the one you picked. It's good. It's just, for me, the mumbling, it makes it hard. Meanwhile, the song I picked is, I'd Gladly Pay Tuesday. It reminded me of the producers.
Yeah.
Unhappy.
Yeah.
I spend my life accounting. I want to be a producer. Like, that's the everything is food song. It's in the major key. It's very optimistic. I just, who'd have fucking thought? I love Robin Williams singing, right? And so you're right. I do like the I Am What I Am song. It's stupid, The staging of it is stupid. But you know what I realize? God help me. They made a Back to the Future musical. They have a Beetlejuice musical. There's a lot of stupid musicals. This movie is already a musical. Why is this not on Broadway? I'd watch this yesterday.
What is this, Popeye Turn Off the Dark?
No, don't change anything. We don't have to let people die like in Turn Off the Dark. Just do it as is. Build a fake town.
Yeah.
It's easy. And most of these songs are pretty fucking good. Like, I am what I am. That's all that I am. And by the way,
I mean, if you know what I mean. Yeah. That song was actually pretty funny. And Bluto actually can speak in intelligible sentences.
Only there. But that's the point. And it's good. I will say Everything Is Food is my favorite. It's got a three-act structure. It's musically relevant. It could be done by Elton John and other people that were in Tommy. And it's just catchy. I think this would be a good one to put on Broadway.
So you want to be a producer?
I want to be a producer with a big hat on.
Well, I mean, who knows? The movie wasn't all that successful when it was released. So
yeah, but I mean, they also did Pretty Woman. They did so many bad. There's plenty of room on Broadway, Chicago, Atlanta for a bad musical. And true. I'm willing to say, not put money up, mind you, but just say this would be better than most of them. The problem is we have to find the next Robin Williams. I will say Sam Levine would be good.
I mean, it's kind of hard to think about who the next Robin Williams could be. He was, how shall I put this? Sui Generis.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm not sure if I pronounced that right, but.
No, you're right. I mean, it's just like saying, who's the next George Carlin going to be? There isn't going to be one. You just need to find someone who's got a mastery of the English language. You know, Robin Williams is just exactly who he was, and that's why we didn't do a lot of Robin Williams picks over the last decade of this show.
Well, he went for this time where he wanted to be more of a dramatic actor instead of a comedian.
Is that where 1 hour photo comes from?
Yes.
And
Insomnia and Bicentennial Man, which yeah, that wasn't that good.
AI is an episode or not?
It could be.
Yeah. What's the one? Oh, he was in Robots, but that's a little sillier. What's the one? We just talked about it. The Importance of Being Matt Damon.
The Good Will Hunting?
Yeah. I mean, that's another one where he's very dramatic. And God help me, I weep like a child when I watch that. I also have feelings when he does Good Morning Vietnam. He's so good in that.
I don't think I've ever seen that that movie.
It's excellent. He's a radio. I mean, you know the story. He's a radio host, but like,
right?
It's just something about him is just. He was a treasure. Anyway, let's wrap up this nonsense, Matt.
This movie is kind of lame.
Well, okay,
and it's way too long.
Okay, so Sudsy, you and I. The end of the movie. They're in a, like, I don't know.
An island where the treasure is.
Supposed to be, right? Pluto and Pappy had originally kidnapped Olive Oil and Sweet Pea. But now Pluto is stealing the show and he's trying to get to the end. Find the treasure, and Popeye and the entire town are on like this. Speaking of Robin Williams, they're like on a ship out of Hook. Like it's like a shanty town on a raft, right?
I think it's Poop Deck Pappy's ship because he's like living in a floating boat,
right?
So whatever he's extorting from the townsfolk isn't buying very much,
right? And so they're doing a race to the finish to get to this one, like, kind of alcove, like this like gulf thing in this island to look for the treasure. And Popeye is trying to rescue people. Pappy is looking for the treasure. Bluto is trying to get there first. And there's a goings on. Like the town folks are vaguely trying to help, but not really. Olive Oil is stuck in the smokestack
that Bluto is kind of towing along with him, and she is so continuously yammering on.
Yeah, and we have to mention here just that Popeye and Margot Kidder.
From Superman?
No, who's the actress who's playing Olive Oil?
Oh, Shelley Duvall.
Shelley Duvall.
Not Margot Kidder.
Yeah, I was about
the
to...
The other one.
Although they initially were seeking Gilda Radner as Olive Oil, which would have been interesting.
I don't want to say better movie, but good movie.
Yeah.
But her and Popeye are doing a lot of incredible manic, like, I imagine most of it's ADR, but it's manic speaking, manic acting, like very specific to the character, very like, oh, Popeye, like very flaily, acty stuff, which is incredible.
She convincingly fooies. I will say that. Yeah, she's a very good. Convincing fooier.
Yeah, why does Bluto want her so much? She is so annoying.
Well, because her family is like the lead of this small independent town.
They're the landed gentry.
Yeah. He wants the boarding house.
And then the end of this collapses, right? Like it's a fight to the finish. Popeye versus Pappy. Pappy is at first trying to admit that he's not the father, then trying to convince Popeye he is the father.
Someone call Mari Povich.
That's right. It's a Jerry Springer RIPD ending.
Yeah.
I don't know if he deserves the RIPD entrance, but I do like the idea that he's Hell's version of St. Peter.
To Jerry Springer?
Yeah, he's just at the gates of Hell. He's like, so you claim to be the father.
Maury. That would be Maury. I mean, you are totally going to hell.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right, because Maury's in a more liminal space than Jerry Springer. Jerry Springer is the guy who decides which layer of hell you're going into.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not a judgmental person. I've also been to Cincinnati, and he unfortunately had to be the mayor. So there's a liminal space here. And, you know, he passed away. So hopefully he gets to have some sort of judgment over whether or not Chili gets to belong on spaghetti. but God help me. We're at the end of this movie where in the end, they all sing whether or not Popeye is strong to the finish, whether or not he gets his spinach. It's a terrible song to end what's otherwise got some backers in it. So, Mr. Quinn.
Time for the reprise. This movie is so, so dumb, and it's too, too long. Although it's got a good, good cast.
Fair enough. Matt is done. Sudsy.
I like the idea of the movie and what it does. I think the parts are a lot greater than the whole, because it is a dumb movie, but Robert Altman was such a talented guy that it's impossible not to, what's the word I'm looking for
fuck
here?
Hmm? No.
Yeah, fuck it up. No, I mean, it was very hard for him to make something that was just totally terrible. And by God, this movie's unique. There's never been another cartoon adaptation like it. I don't think there ever will be. So give it a try. Maybe you'll enjoy it a lot more than me. And hey, great.
So my final thoughts on this is, I think you should see it. I just, to Sudsy's end, you're not going to see anything like it. Like I can't give it a judgment just based on that. Like, is it bad? I think it's not great, but like, there's a difference between not great because you don't know what you're doing. A difference between not great because you tried. Mediocrity. Everyone is trying. It's just not a good movie. I totally think it's worth watching though. I just think you'll come away with it not understanding it. This is the third time I've seen it. I still don't think I get it. I don't know why it exists. I just think it's something. It's a goings on. Like it's fine. It's fun. It's different. It's weird. Not enough movies are weird anymore. The problem is we've homogenized ourselves so much that you don't get movies like this. Like Daniel said, it's big budget. There's a good cast. There's good directors. There's even a great songwriter. They made this. Does that mean it's a flop? Probably financially. But like, we don't go out on a limb anymore. If America's art form is movies, we should improvise more. We should make more weird shit. We don't do this kind of thing anymore. I wish we did. Is that it? Mean this is a success? No.
Do not go gentle into that good night, but rage, rage, rage against the dying of the light. Or in this case, a dying of creativity and artistic integrity.
I just wish that was an American poet instead of an English poet. And that's kind of what I feel here. Like, this is something purely American nonsense. I just wish it mattered more. Because now unfortunately I don't hate Disney. It's just that everything has that Disney glean. And that makes it samey. Speaking of samey nonsense, I was born in 1985. And you know what I wish I had in the back of my parents' car? Garfield stuck to suction cups.
Oh yeah.
So next week we as a family are going to talk about a movie based on a cartoon that I bought in the book from Book Fair.
Oh, yeah. And the one thing that's embarrassed Bill Murray.
One of many things that embarrassed Bill Murray. Thanks, guys.
Season 9 of Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and stars Daniel Suttis and Matt Quinn. The theme music is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod of Incomtech.com and is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and review us wherever podcasts are found. Thanks, guys.